This week's podcast is generously sponsored by the Lee and Jerry Zolden Charitable Foundation in honor of Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
From the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies, this is Pardes from Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, Pardes alum. This week, Bamidbar. This week, at the end of Shabbat, Motzei Shabbat, will be Shavuot. Enjoy the cheesecake, and more importantly, enjoy the Jewish learning. There'll be Jewish learning in many synagogues and many places around the world, and one of them will be at Pardes in Jerusalem. So if you're nearby, stop by Pardes starting at 11:30 p.m. This week, Bamidbar with Rabbi Meir Schweiger. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior member of the Pardes faculty and also serves as the Pardes Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
Thank you, Larry. Before I begin this podcast, I would like to thank our sponsor, Jerry Zolden. Jerry, I truly appreciate your support of Pardes, and I am greatly honored that you have decided to do so by sponsoring my podcast. I invite you to come join me in the Beit Midrash of Pardes, where we can continue learning Torah and discussing Israel. So let us begin the parsha. This week's parsha is Parshat Bamidbar. Bamidbar, which follows Bahar. The end of the book of Vayikra closes a very significant period in the development of the Jewish people. The bookends of that period are the beginning of chapter 19 in the book of Exodus, which concludes with chapter 26 of the book of Leviticus. What role does the mountain play in the development of the Jewish people? Of course, the Jewish people hear God speak to them, have an otherworldly I-Thou experience, which is overwhelming. But essentially, the mountain is where the Jewish people worship God, and where that worship is crystallized in a covenant which happens in chapter 24 of the book of Exodus, where the Jewish people say, Na'aseh v'nishma, whatever God tells us, we will do and we will hear. We will do before we hear. And where the covenant is sealed with chapter 26 of the book of Leviticus, when the Jewish people accept upon themselves the consequences of their actions, the blessings and the curses. In another podcast, I have discussed how the book of Vayikra is essentially giving the Jewish people the blueprint for what it means to be a mamlechet kohanim v'goy kadosh, a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. And once the Jewish people have that blueprint, and once they realize the full ramifications of the agreement which they've made, they are now prepared to take that, to actualize it, to put it into practice. Our book, the book of Bamidbar, is outlining the transitional phase of being in the desert, when the Jewish people leave the mountain but have not yet entered the land of Israel. And in fact, when we look in our book, it was meant to be a very short period. The first 10 chapters of the book are the preparations which the Jewish people need to make before they enter the land. And essentially, those preparations have to do with the organization of the camp. And we've spoken about this in a previous podcast, where each person is given their place and their role within the much larger structure of the people. And at the end of chapter 10, the Jewish people begin the journey, which should ultimately bring them in a very short period of time into the land of Israel, where they need to actualize their destiny. And yet we know from what happens in chapters 11, 12, 13, and 14, that as soon as the Jewish people begin their journey, one after another in rapid succession, there are a series of sins which ultimately culminate with the sending of the spies, where a whole generation will need to die in order to allow a new generation to spring up and come into the land of Israel. 40 years of transition. Today, what I would like to examine is the role of the desert in forging the Jewish people. So let us begin by looking at the characteristics of a desert. I have been in Israel for 45 years, at Pardes for over 40 years. I have gone on almost every hike that Pardes offers. Every year, we have two major hikes. And one of them is always in a desert area, be it the Negev Desert, the Judean Desert, the Arava, in the area of Eilat. And invariably, the tour guides that we have will tell our students, the definition of a desert is a place which has less than 200 millimeters of rain, less than 8 inches. In fact, there are certain deserts that we go to that literally have a tenth of that, which are extreme deserts. Why 200 milliliters of rain? Because that is seen as being the minimal amount of rain that will allow for wheat to grow. And by doing so, will allow for people establishing a presence, a residence that is permanent. And since the desert does not have those conditions, the desert is not seen as a place where people live, but rather a place of transition, where people go through to get from one human habitation to another. We are all aware of the fact that besides the fact that the desert does not have rainfall, the desert is also a place of extremes, extreme heat during the day and cold at night. And people cannot function, or maybe I should say find it very difficult to function, under those extreme circumstances. Note the fact that when the Jewish people left Egypt, in chapter 12 of the book of Exodus, we're told in the beginning of Parshat Beshalach, the middle of chapter 13:17, that God did not take the Jewish people by way of the land of the Philistines, which is the shortest route to take into the land of Israel, which would have been the most logical way to go. Instead, God led the Jewish people in a roundabout way through the desert. And the explanation that is offered is that God was afraid that if the Jewish people would immediately go into the land of Israel, they would encounter warfare, they would be demoralized, and as a result, they would turn back and go to Egypt. Maimonides, in fact, notes in the Guide to the Perplexed that the Jewish people needed to spend time in the desert, to live in a Spartan, extreme atmosphere, to become toughened so that they could then go on and engage in warfare. I would like to examine another way of looking at the desert, which is to see what the Torah itself says later on in Deuteronomy. In chapter 8 of Deuteronomy, God says, I took you through the desert, a place which is inhospitable, where you were afflicted, but you were instructed. And what was the lesson which the Jewish people learned in the desert? That not by bread alone does a man live, but rather by what comes from the mouth of God. I will come back to this idea of the mouth of God a little bit later. But if I just examine it for the moment, at face value, if the desert, in fact, is not a place which lends itself to people permanently living there, which is very hostile, by God providing for all the needs of the Jewish people in the desert, God, in fact, is teaching the Jewish people a very important lesson. No matter where, no matter how, people can actually survive through the help of God. And the flip side of this is that when it seems to be that people are doing the utmost to their abilities, as the Jewish people, when they come into the land of Israel and are extremely successful, that they need to acknowledge that whatever they have is a gift of God. so that on one level, the purpose behind the Jewish people traveling in the desert is in order to realize that their very sustenance, their nourishment, whatever they need, is provided by God. And this idea I would like to connect with an etymological point, which a number of tour guides say that the word desert, which has the root Dalet Bet Resh, should be connected with an expression in Hebrew, which is Lahadbir Et Hatzon, which means to lead the sheep. What is the desert? A desert is a place where shepherds take their sheep to find grazing. And if we take the parallel, it's where God takes God's sheep, the Jewish people, to find their sustenance. But when the Jewish people find their sustenance, they also learn to value, to appreciate the source of that sustenance, and to learn a very important lesson that no matter where they are, whatever they have is provided to them from God. But I would now like to pursue another idea. If the first message, which I spoke about, had to do with the dependence of the Jewish people upon God and the humbling experience, the realization that no matter what, we are always dependent upon God. And perhaps one could add to that the need for serving God. The point which I would like to now examine is not the sense of dependence, but rather the sense of empowerment. And I would actually like to give a certain interpretation that the word midbar has in it the root Dalet Bet Resh, which we know means word, speech. And if I take this phrase, lahadbir et atzon, lahadbir is causative, to cause to speak. Now, it's a little bit hard to use that term in terms of sheep, but I now want to take the analogy to people. And what I would like to propose is that the experience of the Jewish people in the desert is to teach them how to speak, to teach them to emulate God in their speech. And I mentioned earlier, if at Mount Sinai, God speaks to the Jewish people, when God says the Ten Commandments, we know that that speech is overwhelming, terrifying. That speech has a tremendous amount of gravitas. I want to skip to another time when God spoke, and that is in the first chapter of Genesis. God's speech creates the world. As the rabbis say in Pirkei Avot, with 10 utterances, God created the world. And a number of commentaries highlight the fact that our being created in the image of God, this is the Targum Onkelos, the Aramaic translation, is our capacity to speak intelligently, to speak in a way which enables our creativity. And what I would like to present is the experience of the desert, teaching the Jewish people, or enabling them to learn how to emulate God and to speak in a way which is majestic. Let me actually begin with a very interesting example. The first time that God appears to Moshe at the burning bush in chapter 3 in Exodus, the burning bush which is in Mount Sinai, in the desert, there is a whole give and take, a whole back and forth between God and Moshe. When God tells Moshe, when God assigns to Moshe his role, which is to negotiate with Pharaoh and to eventually become the leader of the Jewish people, and Moshe consistently argues with God that he is incapable of doing this. And at one point, Moshe says to God, but I am incapable of speaking. I am kvad peh uchvad lashon, heavy of speech, heavy of tongue. And God becomes angry with Moshe and says, who gave a mouth to someone who is mute? And to fast forward, Moshe becomes the quintessential speaker. Moshe knows how to speak to Pharaoh. Moshe eventually knows how to speak to the Jewish people. Moshe is the lawgiver who gives over to the Jewish people, through speech, all the mitzvot of the Torah. And perhaps the most significant point is that there is a whole book of the Torah, the book of Deuteronomy, Dvarim, which are Moshe's parting words to the Jewish people. So that the desert experience for Moshe was actually an experience of perfecting his speech, perfecting it to the point where he was able to not only speak to Pharaoh, but to ultimately outspeak Pharaoh, to the point where he's able to speak to the Jewish people and give them his legacy for all generations. Let me now come back to the Jewish people. One of the things that seems to characterize the Jewish people when they are in the desert is very problematic speech. And we actually see this in a number of incidents. By the way, this already began in the book of Exodus, when Pharaoh is chasing after the Jewish people in chapter 14, and the Jewish people become terrified. And then you find that they begin speaking with tremendous sarcasm to Moshe. What, there aren't enough graves in Egypt that you had to take us to die in the desert? And then we see a number of situations in the book of Exodus where the Jewish people complain to Moshe. Interestingly, in the book of Bamidbar, after all the preparations have been made, and the Jewish people are now beginning their journey, their march, which should ultimately bring them into the land of Israel. And this is in chapter 10 of the book of Bamidbar. In rapid succession, we have a series of stories where the Jewish people sin, but not only sin through speech, where they complain. Chapter 12, Miriam speaks against Moshe. And then ultimately, when we get to chapter 13 and 14, with the story of the spies, who bring back an evil report about the land of Israel, and where the Jewish people are demoralized, where the Jewish people speak about a God who demonically took them out of the land of Israel, took them out of the land of Egypt, in order to have them killed on the way to Israel. A whole generation needs to die. A new generation needs to grow up that will learn how to speak and take responsibility for their actions. Note the fact that at the end of the book of Bamidbar, we have two very interesting stories. One about the daughters of Tzlofchad, and the other about the tribes of Gad and Reuven. And in both stories, we have examples of people who make requests, who present a case, and who articulate it well. And maybe I'll just make one comment. The daughters of Tzlofchad, the rabbis say, are righteous and intelligent, God-fearing. And when you read the words in chapter 27 of Bamidbar, they present an airtight case as to why they should be given their father's portion in the land, even though the portions were assigned to the men. In fact, God even says to Moshe, Ken benot Tzlofchad tovrot. Yes, the daughters of Tzlofchad speak. You could also translate the word Cain as honestly, with integrity, so that God validates the words of the daughters of Tzlofchad. And then when we get to chapter 32, the tribes of Reuven and Gad make an unusual request that they be given their portion on the eastern side of the Jordan. And there is a whole back and forth negotiations between Moshe and the tribes of Gad and Reuven. Even at one point, Moshe says to them, listen to what you're saying. At one point, it seems that you care more about your sheep than you care about your children. And the tribes of Gad and Reuven get it. They correct their speech. And not only that, but they make a commitment, a vow. And parenthetically, the end of the book of Bamidbar actually speaks about vows, which is highlighting the importance of speech. People say things and then need to follow through on what they say. And in fact, we know from the beginning of the book of Joshua, and then from later on, that the tribes of Gad and Reuven, in fact, lived up to everything which they committed themselves to. So the point which I would like to make is that the desert is a place where the Jewish people hear the word of God, where the Jewish people hear the word of Moshe. In theory, what they hear should have in fact impacted on the way they speak. It didn't happen for the generation that left Egypt. But a new generation grew up in the desert, and they learned the lesson of how to speak. They learned how to hear the words and to make them their own words, so that the book of Bamidbar is not just a transition. The experience of the desert isn't just going from one place to another, but in fact, the experience of the desert was critical in shaping the Jewish people, in teaching them the importance of words, and teaching them the consequences of words. And as a result of that, to enable them to ultimately come into the land, to put into practice whatever they were saying, and to use their speech constructively. Parshat Bamidbar always falls the Shabbat before Shavuot. And this year, it literally is the day before Shavuot. Shavuot is the day when we celebrate not only the giving of the Torah, but perhaps even more significant, the receiving of the Torah. And if the giving of the Torah has to do with what God said to us, the receiving of the Torah is how we internalize that speech and how we become empowered by that speech, how we learn to emulate that speech so that we use our words to create realities and not, God forbid, to destroy. Shabbat Shalom, Chag Shavuot Sameach, and may we always learn the lesson of how to speak.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you in the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.